My favorite part about my job.
And so my favorite part of the job.
The best part about my job.
The best part about my job.
Best part of my job.
The best part of my job.
Best part of my job.
Best part of my job.
Best part about my job.
The best parts about my job.
The best part about my job.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another podcast of The Best Part of My Job. I'm your host, Lars Schmidt. And the Best Part of My Job podcast is a weekly exploration of the world of work, where each week we speak with somebody in a different field to learn a little bit more about what that job does, what a career in that field looks like, and what advice they may have for somebody looking to explore a similar type of career path. Today's guest is actually a very old friend of mine, and I'm really excited to have him on the show. His name is Ronnie Good, and Ronnie is the Ground Combat Element Action Officer at the U.S. Marine Corps Training Command Center. And today we're going to be talking a little bit about a career in the military, more specifically a career in the USMC. Ronnie, how are you?
I'm doing great, Lars. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Yeah, as your introduction said, that's my official title. My rank, I'm a major. I've been in the Marine Corps 17 years and been all around the world, and I'm sure we'll get to that. And I'm excited to be here.
Great. So Ronnie and I, just to give a little context as we get started, Ronnie and I have known each other since grade school. We actually, our careers started together, ironically, at Public Supermarket, where we both bagged groceries. And I have to say, looking back, 30 years now, even then, Ronnie probably had the best work ethic of any Publix bag boy grocer. So no surprise. And actually, a career in the military is something I've known Ronnie since he was very young. I've known that's something that he wanted to do for quite some time. And so we're going to spend some time talking to that. But Ronnie, let me just ask you first, for the listeners, why don't you just spend a few minutes to just walk us through your career in the military?
Okay. So, I was in college, and as Lars alluded to, I've always enjoyed the military, the outdoor stuff. So in 1998, I signed up and went to officer candidate school. So it was the summer of 98, and so 10 weeks in Virginia, finished that up, and then came back, finished college, and then I got commissioned in December 1998 as a second lieutenant. And then, June, headed off to the basic school at 6 months in Virginia, so did that and was assigned a primary military occupational specialty of artillery. So basically I shoot cannons, and then I went to artillery school to learn the job, finished that up, and then I reported to Hawaii for 3 years. I deployed twice out of there, both times to Okinawa, Japan, and then did other excursions from Okinawa for training. Came back to Hawaii for about a year and a half. Finished up in Hawaii, then went to Fort Sill, Oklahoma to teach my job. So I was an instructor, and I finished that up around 2006-ish and went to 2nd Battalion, 10th Marines out of Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. Deployed to Iraq twice out of there. Then from there, I got selected to do a exchange tour with the 75th Ranger Regiment, so that's the U.S. Army. So went to Columbus, Georgia, Fort Benning, right there in Columbus, Georgia. Deployed to Afghanistan twice out of there. Left there around 2011, went back to Camp Lejeune, and deployed to Afghanistan twice out of that tour. And now I'm currently came to Virginia, and the Marine Corps put me through, it's called Command and Staff College, where I earned my master's. And now I'm working for Training Command as an action officer. So lots of reports, lots of Excel, that kind of stuff. So it's a different pace. And what I'm used to, very exciting work, to be perfectly honest. And so, yeah, that's pretty much in a nutshell everything I've done.
All right. And so, Ronnie, tell me, when did you know you wanted to pursue a career in the military?
Like I say, we've known each other forever, and I've always enjoyed, that type of pursuit, the outdoors and stuff. So, it was something that was natural for me. But, went to college, and, I have a finance degree, so I thought for a long time I wanted to be the three-piece suit guy, the stock trader, right. Doing all of that. And, I was still working for Publix, and, so when it came time, ironically, two roommates of mine in college were prior enlisted Marines, and one of them decided that he was going to do the officer candidate school route, and we were talking about it one day, and I was like, let me give it a try. I've always enjoyed the military, so, let me just truly see if this is something I'd want to do. So I went to OCS and did fine, graduated, and got back, and I still didn't make any promises to the Marine Corps. I like to keep my options open, And when it came up time for me to graduate school, you know, Publix was offering to promote me to store manager, and you know how that goes.
Yep.
And I had actually talked with some folks at Merrill Lynch. They were talking about hiring me on as a temporary, like kind of like an internship kind of thing for a while, and then mm-hmm. see if it works out. Had a couple other job offers there in Orlando, and then I still had the Marine Corps, and I just like, you know what? Let me do the Marine Corps thing, because it'll be a unique challenge, and it's something that you know, let me give it a shot. And so that's what I did, and here I am 17 years later just having a blast.
Yeah. And so was it was there something in particular that drew you to the Marine Corps? Was it the connection to your roommates, or was that one of the branches of the service that you knew you wanted to be?
Answer E, all of the above. You know, you know, it was a lot of it. I can't honestly say that it was always, hey, I, you know, want to be a Marine. I don't know. I mean, you know, my roommate said, hey, you know, he had been a Marine. He loved it. And then he was going to Marine Officer Candidate School. And, you know, I just naturally just drifted that way and was like, yeah, sure, let me try it. You know, I mean, that's really what it came down to. I didn't even really pursue the other services, to be, you know, looking back, be quite honest. It was just a natural fit. Just lean that way and go, you know.
Okay. And so when, I guess, rewinding back early in your Marine Corps career, what was the experience of boot camp like?
Well, for me, it was officer candidate school.
Okay.
But, I, you know, obviously know what you mean. So OCS, you know, it's, I went for 10 weeks, and it's the best way to summarize it. It is just daily testing and evaluation of your leadership potential.
Got it.
And they do that through putting you through, pretty rigorous physical endeavors, and while you're tired and sleepy and hungry, then they're testing you academically. But every single day for 10 weeks, they're testing you on your leadership ability, and that's really what it is. I mean, there's you know, people have always seen, you know, Full Metal Jacket in the movie. I mean, it's nothing, you know, it's not like that.
Right.
You know, but the obstacle courses, those are real. I mean, we do have the obstacle courses, which are fun. You know, I get a kick out of doing that kind of stuff. So, you know, it's not easy by any means. You know, I'm having to look back, you know, 17 years, you know, my perception's a little bit different now, I guess, but
sure.
It wasn't easy by any means. It wasn't overly difficult because it was something I wanted to do. And, you know, I think I had a little different, unique perspective. I was a little bit older than the average guy going there. I was a little bit, you know, I've been working at Publix at that point for almost 9 years, so I had a job to fall back on. You know, it wasn't a thing that I had to go through, and I went there with an open mind saying, hey, you know, one, I'm not going to quit, but number two, you know, hey, if I don't make it, it's, you know, it's not the end of the world for me.
Right.
So, you know, I got together with a good bunch of guys, and the recruiter helped out a lot. I mean, they prepare you. They want you to succeed. You know, it's not a just show up and jump in the deep end. I mean, the recruiter you work through, the officer selection officer, I still talk to that guy today. And, I mean, but, yeah, he made sure that we were very well prepared physically, mentally, and then, you know, you show up and you do your best, and that's really what it is, and that's just daily testing. That's the best way for me to describe it.
Okay. And, you know, you talked a little bit about, in your kind of overview of your military career, some of your deployments, but let's come back to that in a moment. Where kind of over the course of your 17 years, where have you been deployed so far?
Okay, so first I deployed twice to Okinawa, Japan, and so from there, that the first one, 9/11 hadn't happened yet, and while we sit in Okinawa, Japan, we're there, we train, do a lot of jungle training just because it's a very jungle area, and then we go off of Okinawa to shoot artillery, so we can't shoot on Okinawa, so we would go to mainland Japan, go to Korea, go to Thailand, that kind of thing, and shoot there.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of do a whole big tour of, you're based out of Okinawa, so you fly or take a ship, and so you kind of get to see the that area of the world quite a bit, so that's a lot of fun. Came back and went to Okinawa a second time, and then 9/11 had happened there, so at that point, you know, I was assigned to 3rd Marines, and it was always the big discussion, hey, is 3rd Marines going to go this time? Like, you know, what are we going to do? So then the training was intensified.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, it was, you know, a lot of times it was 7 days a week just because we didn't know. You know, we had no
sure.
idea if we're going to go or not. You know, your stuff's packed, oh, unpack it, now pack it again, you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, that was happening during 9/11. And then, you know, and then I've been to Iraq. Let's see. Well, I've been to Iraq twice, and I've been to Afghanistan. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4 times.
Four
I've been
times.
To Afghanistan 4 times, yeah.
Okay. And what, you know, I think specific to Iraq and Afghanistan, tell me a little bit about kind of what it's like to be deployed in a war zone, in an active theater. What is that experience like?
You know, it's you go through the full range of emotions.
Yeah.
You know, and so, and it's really unique to look, you know, these great questions and to look back on it. So, you know, my first two times to Iraq, you know, I didn't have a son yet. So it was just, you know, my wife and I. And then, you know, our joke was, you know, she's, you know, in the Marine Corps, we try to say we're expeditionary. You know, we can grab our bags and go on a moment's notice. Well, you know, wife had to be that way too. You know, hey, honey, I'm going. So you've got the house and the dogs. That's, you know, that was pretty much our attachment. And, you know, make sure my truck's still running when I get home. You know, we didn't know, didn't have a lot of stuff, you know, hardly any even furniture. And then when you go and you have a son, it's a little bit different, you know,
sure.
So you know, or daughter, you know, for us as a son. So, I mean, then you, there's a whole different, you know, a emotional thing there. So, you know, I always, do the typical, Marine thing. I have, I always kept a picture of Crystal on my helmet, you know, take my helmet off. That's the first thing I see. And then, you know, when I deploy later and I have a son, I take my helmet off and then there's the little dude staring back at me, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's just like, wow, you know, I got one more thing that, you know, I definitely want to make it home too. So it's the full range of emotions. It's, I mean, it's like anything else. You have good days, you have bad days, you know, it's a very unique experience, you know, especially going over to Iraq, going to Afghanistan. I mean, you know, a person can talk about it all they want, or a person can read about it all they want, but until you actually go over there and interact with Iraqis or Afghanis, you don't really understand it, because Lord knows, before I went, you know, I mean, I studied every book I could and read everything, watched every documentary I could on both countries, but until you get over there and really see it, you know, then you get a full appreciation for what you're doing.
Yeah, that's actually, I want to dig into that a little bit more. I mean, what kind of things can you do to prepare for going into a theater like that?
Okay, well, I can tell you what I did.
Yeah.
You know, and I by no means say that I have all the answers, but
sure.
So when I first found out that I was going, you know, going to Iraq, and I was a battery commander, so I had about 130 Marines. We had a provisional infantry mission, so you know, we put our big guns away, and so it was, you know, basically a lot of walking in 120 degree heat, and so really what I did was I sat down and every book that I could find written on Iraq. I mean, I started with travel guides. I typed, you know, Iraqi experiences into Google, hit enter, and I would just spend a lot of my own personal time reading. And then, you know, I went in 2007, so we had already been rotating in and out of Iraq quite a bit. And so we already had a lot of combat veterans that I could sit down, you know, friends of mine, you know, they come over to the house and, you know, light up the bonfire, get the grill going, and, you know, drink some cold beverages and just say, hey, well, you know, this is where I'm going. Have you been there? And talk to people. And the military, and I'll speak specifically to the Marine Corps, does a great job. We have the Marine Corps Center for Lessons Learned, and you can email the folks there, and they will send you after-action reports of all different units, whatever you're looking for. So I poured over those, and so I would say going into Iraq, I was probably just as, you know, mentally or educationally prepared as I could be.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, the other thing with the Marine Corps is, I mean, you know, our training works. It's, you know, we train a lot, and then you just have to trust your equipment and trust your training, and above all else, you know, put trust in your Marines, and it all works out good.
Yeah. And so when you get there, I think for your first tour in Iraq, you know, you did all those things to kind of prepare, you know, you get on the ground, you start, what are some of those kind of ground actions? You mentioned the big guns were away and it was more of an infantry kind of mission. What were the nature, and not specifics, obviously, but
yeah.
What were the kind of things that that your first tour entailed?
Okay, so basically I had three different mission sets for my battery. So we had a combat outpost that was smack dab in the middle of four towns.
Okay.
So I basically... I wasn't in charge of those four towns, but I worked within those four towns. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, so I worked with, you know, I had, you know, four sheikhs, four different, you know, religious leaders that I dealt with. And so that was, you know, all the patrolling was there in my four towns. And then so I had, you know, dismounted patrolling, so where you're walking. And then I had mounted patrolling, which was all our vehicles. And then the third thing I had to do was defense. I had to send Marines to provide defense for Camp Fallujah.
Okay.
So that was like the three things I had to rotate all my Marines through. So that was the big piece that we had there in Iraq.
Got it. Okay. And how, you know, having kind of been deployed both in Iraq and Afghanistan, how would you compare and contrast those settings?
Oh my gosh. I'm trying to think. I would say the terrain is much harsher in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
You know, the Afghanistan goes from mountains to deserts a lot. And then I was in a more desert area of Iraq, so it was just completely flat. I'm trying to think. And then, you know, the enemy is totally different, you know. And, yeah. You know, in Iraq, you're fighting, you know, at the time, you know, I'm talking 07, was a lot of Al-Qaeda. And then when you get to Afghanistan, you've got more Taliban-style fighters. So they, you know, they fight differently. And then the... You know, Afghanis are not Arabs.
Right.
You know, so that's something that people have to understand. A lot of times, even in the military, we don't understand that until you get there and you see, okay, so, you know, it's a different culture.
Mm-hmm.
And then Afghanistan, being so mountainous, you know, it's almost like, you know, you will have different tribes, different dialects, you know, depending on what mountain range you're on. Does that make sense?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, Afghanistan was just very much different than Iraq.
Okay.
I don't know if that answers it or.
No, that does. That does. And it's, you know, I think from an understanding, and obviously I've never been in the service myself, but just from what I've read and what I've seen, I mean, it seems like that that description actually aligns pretty well with kind of how I envisioned it.
Right.
You know, I want to kind of dig more into your deployment experience just for a moment and yeah. ask a question that may be a bit personal. So answer as much as you're comfortable with, but it's something that I'm curious about. You know, in both of those deployments, have you been in indirect combat? And if so, what was that experience like?
Yes, both times. Well, yeah, and both in Iraq and Afghanistan. And it's very loud.
Yeah,
and it is. It happens faster and closer and more violent than what you think it will.
Right.
And so it's just you know, surprising, but then you see that your training does work, and your Marines absolutely have 100% faith, and you know, and you know, you do what you have to do, you know.
Yeah, and so when a firefight starts or an engagement starts, like what is your at that point is it instinctual? Does your training just take over? Does it take a minute for your brain to kind of process what's going on before that happens? Like what are the early kind of stages of reacting to an engagement?
You know, Lars, everybody reacts a little bit differently.
Yeah.
The first time I was ever shot at, I got really mad. That was the first emotion. It was like, are you kidding me? You know? And
right.
Then training took over.
Yeah.
And as I went on subsequent deployments and, you know, it's not everything was, you know, a gunfight, a guy super close to me. I mean, I've been in convoys where IEDs have gone off and I've been pretty far away when I've had enemy try to, you know, lob rocket-propelled grenades at me and it's landing nowhere near me. So I've been through quite a gamut. I haven't been, you know... I was never that guy kicking in a door or something on a movie. So, you know,
right.
that wasn't me doing that. But as it happens more often, you get more used to it and you kind of know what to expect. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, what I try to explain to a lot of people is, you know, driving a car when we were 16 and we first got our licenses, you know, I mean, we weren't the best drivers. And if we almost got an fender bender, like, you know, it's a pretty traumatic event, right?
Sure.
And then after you've been driving for 20 years, it's like, a person almost rear-ended me. No big deal. I'm good. You know, you keep driving. And so that kind of, you know, that happens when you deploy to a, you know, a combat zone that, you know, some things, you know, get your attention more than others do. And then, you know, God bless our Marines, these young kids. I watch them. I love them to death. And, you know, it's amazing what we ask these 18, 19-year-old kids to do, and they do it superbly well. So, yeah, it's, I mean, absolutely, in the beginning, there's a little bit of shock factor, but then, yeah, your training takes over, and you just go.
Okay. And what, you know, you talked a little bit about what the experience was like before you had your son, when you were deployed, then what it was like after. How are you able to kind of stay in touch with your family when you're deployed overseas?
Oh, okay. So, you know, when I first started deploying in 07, it was mainly via email, and when I could, I'd make phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I did that. I'm not a big letter writer. I tried to write a few handwritten letters, but, you know, just no. It's, and then plus, anyone tries to read my handwriting, it's like hieroglyphics. But, you know, so, yeah, I wasn't big into writing letters, but you can. And mainly it's email and phone calls when you're able to, and you wanna, when you have access to that stuff. And then, you know, as I've, you know, gotten promoted, I've, you know, as I've deployed, like, you know, at one point when I deployed, I was the battalion executive officer. So I was the second in command of our battalion. Well, I was stationed at Camp Leatherneck, and literally, like, you know, I was behind a desk most of the time. So I had email 24/7. I had a phone sitting on my little plywood wall so I could call, you know, with the time difference. And then, you know, as Iraq and Afghanistan built up, more email services were provided for all the troops, and I actually was able to Skype a few times with my wife, you know, as a battalion XO. So, I mean, you know, there's all different ways to keep in communication with the wives back home and the kids and stuff.
Okay. All right, good. Well, I want to shift gears a little bit and talk a bit more broadly of kind of career development within within the Marine Corps. So you obviously you were in a role where you were active and you were in theater. Now you're in a role where it's – tell me a little bit about your role now.
Okay. So, yeah. So right now I – you know, I've got a – I work in an area. It's the ground combat element. So – you know, it's one, two, three, four. It's about six of us that are working together, and training command is the higher headquarters for all the different schools in the Marine Corps.
Okay.
And so they're all disparate locations all across the United States. So one of the biggest changes for me and is I'm used to being in a battalion where I can get up from my desk, and I can go walk to where the other person is working that I need to talk to, and I can sit down and have a conversation with them. And I'm a people person. I got the gift for gab, so talking is not a problem for me.
Well, now, which I can validate, having known you for, yes, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So the what I have to do now is it's all pick up the phone. It's all email. You know, I send and receive, you know, numerous PowerPoints, Excel documents, reports, that kind of stuff. And it's an important job. You know, it really is, and it's very interesting to me to see this higher level how the Marine Corps works. You know, I'm used to being down more in the forest, and now I'm away from the forest where I can see the forest more.
Yep.
You know, so it's you know, it's very interesting. So where I'm normally in the micro view, now I'm more of the macro view. So you know, that's my job. It changes day to day. Who knows what I'm going to be, you know, what I'm going to be working on when there's projects that come in. They get assigned to one of us action officers, and, you know, the project may take, you know, depending on what it is, it could take years to come to fruition. So you're working on multiple things, you know, throughout my time there. So, you know, I just checked in last month. I've been there for literally for about a month, month and a half.
Okay.
So I'm still, you know, trying to figure it out as I go along. But, you know, it's a great organization with great folks. So, yeah, no complaints whatsoever.
And in terms of kind of your career development, how much of an active role do you have in kind of determining how your career develops and you know, kind of which areas it progresses to within the Marines?
You actually have quite a bit in the Marine Corps. A person, I'm speaking strictly officer side because
sure.
that's what I've done. I can talk enlisted too if you want to, but for the officer side, for me, I truly enjoyed my MOS, so military occupational specialty artillery, and I wanted to stay in it as much as I could. And the Marine Corps, you know, we don't really want quote unquote like specialists. We look to we try to make people very well rounded. So you go to the Fleet Marine Forces, and you do your job. So I was an artilleryman as a lieutenant when I was in Hawaii. And then you get assigned to go on some type of B billet. So that's some type of job besides the fleet, if that makes sense. So luckily, my job was to send me to Fort Sill, Oklahoma, and teach my MOS to young lieutenants coming through. So that was a lot of fun. I got to stay in my job. And then from there, you kind of go to a school. So I went to, I was able to go to the Army's Captain's Career Course. And the Marine Corps, and all the services are this way. I'm just speaking very specifically Marine Corps.
Sure.
But the Marine Corps is really big on what we call PME, Professional Military Education. So then you go and you basically, you go to school and, you know, it's all military theory, that kind of thing. And so you learn and study. And then when you finish that, then you go back to the fleet. So it's kind of like a cycle if you follow it. So fleet tour, then you go to some type of bee billet, then a school, then, you know, you go back and do a fleet tour. Now, as I've progressed, I've spent a lot of time in the fleet. You know, it will determine which way you go. So I was a battalion XO in 2011, and then from there I went and I advised in the Republic of Georgia. So basically just, you know, south of Russia. So, you know, I was in the Republic of Georgia for 6 months advising an infantry battalion, and then I deployed with them to Afghanistan. So I was kind of counted as like a fleet tour, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Then when I got selected for school, and then so I came here to Virginia, Sequantico, to and I got my master's at Command and Staff College. And then from there, you know, the Marine Corps, I've done just about everything I need to do as a major in the fleet, because at each rank there's certain wickets you need to hit.
Yep.
I've already hit those big wickets, so it was a natural fit for the Marine Corps to leave me here in Quantico. And so, you know, they didn't have to move my family or anything, so it worked out really well for us. So I stay here in Quantico. I'll do this job, which gives me, you know, the higher-level Marine Corps perspective to make me a little bit more well-rounded.
Yep.
And, you know, next, hopefully, knock on wood, I'm on the board right now. Hopefully I get selected for battalion command, and I'd be headed back to the fleet within a year or so to go take over a battalion command somewhere. So that's up to the board. You know, it's just someone briefs my file, so we'll see what happens.
Okay.
But, yeah, that's kind of how it is. But a person absolutely has quite a bit of control over their career in the Marine Corps. I've known guys who have taken very non-traditional paths, and I'm speaking specifically artillery. Mm-hmm. You know, some guys have become foreign area officers. They have quite the language aptitude. So they take a language aptitude test. They pass it. They go to Monterey, California for a couple years, learn the language. They become foreign area officers or regional area officers, and then they go that track route, and which can take them totally out of artillery MOS. But if that's what you want to do, it's a good thing. You know,
yep.
It's a good thing for the Marine Corps. I've known guys who, you know, they go to Naval a really good friend of mine went to Naval Postgraduate School, and I mean, he's a computer geek. I mean, the guy absolutely is. But now he works in Baltimore, or not Baltimore, he works in Maryland at the Marine Corps Cyber Command.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the good fit for the Marine Corps, good fit for him. So him and his family are up there doing that. So, yeah, a person can absolutely kind of tailor their career in the Marine Corps to what they like. But, you know, what I always counsel young officers on, if you want to do something that's non-traditional, you just have to understand that there's sometimes second and third order effects to that. And it's not that those are bad. It's just, hey, I'm making a choice to go this way, so I may never come back to artillery. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yep.
Where me, I loved artillery, and I'm like, I don't want to do anything that takes me away from being an artilleryman. So,
right.
You know, just a person has to make decisions along their path of, hey, this is what I want to do, or, you know, I want to go do something else.
Okay. Yeah, let's talk for a moment about, soldiers transitioning back to civilian life after active duty. So, I mean, one of the things that that I think many people kind of in my field think about and talk about, and frankly, most of us, I think, feel we could do a better job in the civilian community is helping returning soldiers kind of make that transition back to civilian life. And so I'm curious from your point of view, you know, and obviously you're still active duty, but you have many people, I imagine, who've served for you and with you, who've transitioned to civilian life. What is that? What are some of the challenges that you see soldiers facing when they're returning to civilian life? And I guess maybe a part two of that would be, what would be some ways that the civilian community can better support that transition?
You know, honestly, as when you're hiring a veteran, you know, I mean, it's just like anything, you know, don't stereotype. I mean, not that people do, but I mean, let's just be honest, you know, don't stereotype them and think that every person returning is some, you know, crazed person with PTSD, because, you know, that's not the case. You know, I get that stereotype sometimes. And I would say for a prospective employer, so say, you know, we'll just use you, for example, if you're going to hire a veteran in any service, you know what I would do is there's two things I would do is one, throw down a challenge to them.
Mm-hmm.
Challenge them. Say, hey, I need you to get me more podcasts, and I need this many per month. You know, I'm just making something up here, but
sure.
you're throwing down a legitimate challenge, because in the military we live by missions. You know, you're given a mission to do, so it's a challenge.
Yep.
And then the next thing is just provide opportunities for increased responsibility, because in the military, And it's hard to put these things in writing on a resume. And I've helped, quite a few Marines try to develop resumes, and I end up telling them just pay someone else to do it because, I mean, I can't word it the way that a lot of businesses want it. I'm so inculcated in the Marine Corps, you know.
Yep.
But, like I say, there's 18 and 19-year-old kids that are saving lives on a battlefield that are responsible for numerous, numerous lives. And then they turn around and they go to work somewhere, and it's like, okay, you can make coffee and you're allowed to make copies. Well, that would just drive, a person nuts. I mean,
right.
If you really think about it, look at the responsibility you and I had as 15-year-old kids. You know, we say bagging groceries at Publix, but, we actually did quite a bit, And from a lot of my former Marines that I keep in touch with on Facebook, and I ask them, hey, how's it going in the civilian world? How are things? That's two of the common themes I hear from them is they're not challenged enough, and they're not provided opportunities for more responsibility. Like they want more responsibility.
Right.
So yeah, that's the when you sent me that list of questions, I kind of put a little poll thing out there on Facebook for all my former Marines that are out in the civilian world, and to a T, that's pretty much what they came back with.
Okay. And are there any resources that you're aware of for, I guess, either returning veterans looking to reenter civilian world, or perhaps even resources for civilian organizations that are looking to hire veterans that you can think of?
Yeah, I know there's quite a few job fairs I've seen on different bases. There are resources on base. I've never used them, so I can't speak, very intelligently about them. I've seen the signs and I've heard about it where they go and they help Marines, develop the resumes. And before, and again, I'm speaking specifically Marine Corps, I know the other services do this, but, the Marine Corps, we will take people leaving irregardless of rank. And we put them through, it's 2 weeks of classes before they leave the Marine Corps, and it's basically telling people, here are places to go to do these things. So, hey, if you want to build your resume in 2 weeks, you just can't build a perfect resume. But they're like, hey, you need to get in on LinkedIn. And, you need to have a normal profile picture. Don't do something that whatever on spring break where you met up with your buddies. It's the basics of those kind of things to try to help Marines as they're transitioning out. So, yes, the services and stuff are out there. And, the one thing that I tell Marines to do is that, me, I'm big, be prepared, and I tell people, I was like, it is what you're going to make of it.
Right.
If I'm deciding that when I decide to transition out of the Marine Corps, believe me, as much as I prepared to go to Iraq and Afghanistan, I'll put that much preparation into leaving the Marine Corps,
Got it. And what advice would you have for somebody right now that, 17, 18-year-old kid who's kind of evaluating what to do with their career, or perhaps even, older like you and your kind of entry, who's considering a career in the Marines? What advice would you have for somebody who is contemplating a similar career path to yours?
I would tell them go for it. I absolutely, without a hesitation, I would say, go for it, whether it's the Marine Corps, the Army, any one of the other services, especially for younger kids. Hindsight being 20/20, I look back now and, I wish I would have enlisted right out of high school. Yeah, did I do well in college and got a finance degree and all that kind of stuff? Sure, I absolutely did. But, seeing my roommates in college, they were more focused. They absolutely were. They got degrees that they're all using right now. I don't know, I don't know when, if ever, I'm going to use my finance degree. I mean, I'm glad I have it, and I make a joke about it. But, had I...
It may not be too late for a three-piece suit yet.
That's right. I tell people, go for it. The military, it's a great family institution. I mean, is it difficult? Sure. Are you going to be away from your family? Yes. But no matter what job a person has, there's good and there's bad.
Sure.
I tell people, hey, if you have any inkling whether you want to try the military or not, just go for it. What I tell people is, what is the very worst that happens? You sign a 4-year contract, you do 4 years, and then you leave, and you're like, oh, wait a minute, now I have a GI Bill, and I've been around the world, and I've made great friends I'm going to keep up with forever, and, hey, I can look back and say I may or may not have liked it, but, you learn a lot of valuable skills, and I don't think people can get those skills until you travel around and you interact with other cultures and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like you learn so much by just the traveling and being around people you don't know. It will force a lot of people outside their comfort zone.
Okay. All right, so I'm gonna put you in a time machine. We're going back to the year is 1993. You're coming out of high school again, and
it's
time to figure out what career you'll pursue. I'm taking military off the table because I'm forcing you to do something different, and I'm taking publics off the table too, right?
Sure.
Just in case that was your fallback, you know, that neither of those are options. What is your career? What would you be doing if you were in the military today?
I would be doing something with either forestry or like soil and water conservation.
Okay.
You know me. I grew up hunting and fishing, always outdoors. I mean, that's just the stuff that I love. And I would be doing some type of outdoor career. You know, without a doubt. Like I say, something with the earth, outdoors. That would have to be me. Getting my hands dirty.
And last question for you, and this is a question that I put to all the guests closing up because I'm personally pretty curious about how this applies to different fields. But for you, where do you find your inspiration?
Oh, well, I mean, simple. I mean, first I got to start with, faith in God. And from there, my family. And, those are my two big, internal compasses and my internal drive, you know, it just goes back to the, way I was raised and everything. So, yeah, just God and family.
Great. Well, Ronnie, I really appreciate you taking some time out of your day to join the podcast and share your story.
Yeah, thanks, Lars. It's great to reconnect with you, man. We got to get together and get the families together, man.
Yeah, we absolutely do. Well, now you're at Quantico, you're not far, so we can make that happen pretty easy.
Yeah, awesome.
All right, Ronnie, take care, and thanks again.
Okay, we'll see you, Lars.
All right, see ya.
Bye.